I'll just fiddle about with this a minute. Now, as I said, Stephen Schotts was unable to be here. In fact, he no longer works for Libra Digital, which is one of the reasons he was no longer able to be here. He did offer me his presentation, but although he did follow the instructions to a certain extent, I did feel that if I gave you his presentation, I would probably be, if only a subtle advocate for Libra Digital, I would be speaking more on Libra Digital's behalf than I thought I should do. So if you are interested in Libra Digital, and it was particularly using Libra Digital as a conduit for mobile telephony, which is what Chris was talking about, if you're interested in that or other suppliers that can do that, I have a great deal of information about that, so I can give you information about individual suppliers. Also, and I'm not plugging this because I get a royalty from it, because I don't, but last week the PA published the PA Guide to Going Digital, which I actually wrote, and most of those suppliers are listed in there, although you'd need more information than the listings and the short paragraphs about them to make any decisions about who you wanted to work with, obviously. So what I decided to talk to you about instead... Sorry, this isn't like mine. Can you come and set up the slideshow for me, please? What I decided to talk to you about instead were two aspects of handhelds. Thank you. One of them was to explain to you why I think handhelds are important, because I still feel there's a huge amount of resistance to them, probably a bit less for those of you who've been listening to what's been going on for the last 24 hours. And secondly, to talk about discoverability in the context of handhelds, which, of course, is the theme of this session. So, first of all, what do you think about handhelds and how they fit into your organisation? Now, in this next slide... In this next slide, I've tried to encapsulate the kind of comments that people give me about handhelds, from reducing them to tears, to wanting to smash them up, to still thinking they're in the balance, their future's in the balance, to loving them, to making quite a lot of money out of them. So I guess you're somewhere on that spectrum. The most common comment that I hear, though, is that academic publishers just can't see the relevance to them. Scholarly publishers and academic publishers think that handhelds are a bridge too far, that they're good for reading novels on, they're good for finding out the bus timetable, they're good for finding out which restaurant to go to, but you really don't believe that scholarly users are going to use them in a very serious kind of way. Now, Chris has already touched on how they're being held in China, so again, maybe you're beginning to revise your ideas about that. But I just wanted to make the point that they are being used by scholarly communities already in many parts of the world. I'm going to give you a quote from a writer called Evgeny Morozov, who wrote an article in Prospect magazine, which was in July, which was actually a review of a book called The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. I don't think he understood this book at all, by the way. I know that's quite arrogant of me to say so. I've given you the book in my bibliography at the end. I think that this book, The Shallows, which is written by someone called Nicholas Carr, and it's published by Norton, I think it should be required reading for all academic and scholarly publishers. Because if what he says is right, and about... the internet really altering the way people think about things, then that should have a bearing on how you produce content in the future. But anyway, one of the things he says is that the net ruins our kind of linear concentration, so people want to receive information in sound bites. And Evgeny Morozov says, to attack the net for ruining our concentration while glossing over how it disrupts the economics of publishing is like complaining about too many calories in the food served on the Titanic. So in other words, it's here and you've got to cope with it. So that's the kind of context that I'm giving you this presentation in. It seems de rigueur in presentations like this to show you lots of pictures of handheld readers as if you've never seen one before. I do feel it's a bit like, you know, when you hire a holiday house and the owner takes you around and shows you how to use the tap and how to turn the light on, as if you've been living in a mud hut for your life up to that point. But this slide does actually serve a purpose as well, and that is to show you that the devices run from a spectrum, from handhelds through to the PC. So you may be right if you think that some of your users don't want to look at content on handhelds. They may prefer the more flexible medium of the notebook, which is still, of course, much more portable than the PC, or they may prefer to use them on PCs. But the challenge for you is to produce content that can be shown on any of those things, and preferably on all of them by the same user. And that's just an example of the various handhelds that are available at the moment, including, of course, the iPad. Interestingly, there are some British lookalikes being developed now. There will be some British companies at Frankfurt who've developed iPad lookalikes and iPad substitutes, and they will be coming into British shops before Christmas, so look out for those as well. And again, I can give you information about those, but I'm not going to plug them here. So, some e-book statistics. I've taken most of these statistics from the Horizon Education Report, which was published, I think, on August the 14th of this year. I've given you the link to it in the bibliography at the end. And one of the best things about this report, it chooses six technologies that it thinks are going to be important to education in the future. Two for the present, two for the medium term, and two for the long term. And it gives you lots of links about how these technologies are being used and how they will be developed. And those links are really worth following up. But interestingly, the two technologies that it identifies for the present are open source and handhelds. And it only puts e-books in the medium term. So what it's saying is the publishers, consumers, the audience for ebooks, are already using handheld, but the ebooks themselves aren't quite ready for the technology at the moment. So I think that's an interesting observation, and probably explains why some of you don't think that your material's right for handhelds. The total publisher sales of digital products in 2009, according to the Publishers Association, was £150 million. And the UK split was 5 million general consumer, 8 million consumer reference, 8 to 9 million schools, which is a surprise, I think. And then 130 million academic professional. Most of this, of course, is library sales. Most of it's stuff that's being accessed on PCs at the moment. To give you a comparison, in the US, e-book sales for trade only last year were $169.5 million, and those were only the IDPF figures, which, of course, aren't comprehensive. But they grew by 204% last year. And according to the ARL, discrete e-book sales to ARL libraries, which is 3 years ago, and going back a long way now, was $73 million. Sales of e-books in our community are growing quite rapidly. These are the figures from the Horizon Education Report. The Horizon Report says there are now 4 billion mobile subscribers worldwide, and 2.6 billion of these, in other words, two-thirds, live in developing countries. 1 billion new phones are being produced every year, and the technology is improving all the time. And for a large and growing group of people, and Chris again referred to this when he was talking about China, mobiles are more affordable and more accessible than desktops, and these people have no intention of buying any other kind of technology. It'll be mobiles and only mobiles as far as they're concerned. But for people who can afford other technology, who want more flexibility, as I've said, there are still smart books and other kinds of portable device. So what can you make of all of this as scholarly publishers? Well, first of all, I think you can learn quite a lot from trade publishing. It irritates me to say that somewhat, because I don't know what you think about trade publishers, but having done absolutely nothing with e-books for about three quarters of a decade, they suddenly discovered them in 2008, and now you would think that they'd invented them. But having said that, I think that they have done some things with e-books that we could have thought about earlier, and that certainly could be applied to academic and scholarly publishing. First of all, they're using e-books to publicise their publications across the board, and we've heard about that from both OUP and from the RSC. They're making the format fit the occasion, so they've already started producing books that are special for the technology, books with quizzes in, books with online dating in them, books with chocolate adverts in them. One of the companies that I most admire, incidentally, and again, I've written a text, a case study on this for Alps, and you might not see the connection at first because obviously the product's a million miles from your product, but the company is Harlequin Mills and Boone, and they publish 155 books every month and in 13 different series, which go from the sort of very raunchy down to the old-fashioned doctor and nurse romances. And all of these books are available as e-books. Now, what they've done with their e-books worldwide is they've developed a hugely loyal consumer community, to the extent that there are some people who buy all 155 titles every month from Mills and Boone. So I think there are lessons to learn there about how to get your customers locked into buying your publications regularly. Exploiting viral marketing opportunities. Well, we've heard quite a lot about search inside the book, so I won't say any more about that. But building communities. I mean, I've talked about online dating communities. So Penguin's got one as well. Penguin Classics has a quiz, so it gets people involved in its quiz. Gapminder is a product that was created for schools, and it's about finding out how to use statistics online. And then the picture on the right hand at the bottom of the screen is a product called Walking Through Time, which was developed by Edinburgh University and the Adena project. And that's about taking a map, a geographical map of an area, and looking back on it to see what it looked like in the 19th century and the 18th century. So we can learn from educational software companies as well. Unusually, there has been some scholarly research done on handheld readers, even though there hasn't been very much serious research done on handheld readers at all. And this survey was only published on August the 24th. Again, I've given you the link for it. It was commissioned by the American Council of Learned Societies, and it's called the HEB Handheld Reader Study. HEB just stands for Humanities Ebooks Online, which the person who carried out the research was the collection manager for Humanities eBooks Online, so she used that resource to carry out the survey. They asked 4,000 people to take part in this survey, and they only got 142 participants, which was quite good going, actually, because the demands on the participants in the survey were quite considerable. I do recommend you read this all the way through, by the way. Some of the results are fascinating. Every single person who took part was a professional of some kind. About 60% of them were librarians, and the rest were either academics or postgraduates. And one of the things that she describes, which I haven't reproduced here because there just isn't time, is the difficulties that people had with the functionality, even though they were professional users. What she doesn't say, and I don't think she researched this, is whether these difficulties extended to all ebooks or whether it was just because the people were using them on mobile phones. But anyway, she did the community, the publishing community, the very great service of distinguishing between ebooks for just reading purposes and ebooks for scholarly research. And the users, the people who participated, did say that those two things were different, and their reaction to using mobile phones for one was more favourable than the other. So 75% of these participants, these 142 participants, said that they would use the handheld version in preference to the online version used on a PC on their mobile phone if it were just for straightforward reading. But 69% of them said they would rather use the ebook on their PC rather than on their handheld if it were for research where you have to go backwards and forwards. And of the librarians, three out of four said that they thought their patrons, and this, some of the charts in this reporter, a bit confusing, by the way. I mean, she does say 3 out of 4. I don't think that top slide really indicates 3 out of 4, but anyway. She said 3 out of 4 of the librarians thought that their patrons would prefer mobiles for general reading. That's opposed to either print books or books online on a PC. But they thought that 71% of their patrons would prefer to use either online e-books accessed through PCs or the print version if they were using it for research and dashing backwards and forwards. However, of the librarians, 63% said they would be somewhat or very likely to divert their budget to e-books for handheld readers in the future. And now she doesn't quite explain why that is, and I'd like to know whether it was because they thought they were getting them cheaper or they just think it's the way forward or whether they had some other reason. But anyway, I thought that was interesting and that it was something else that you ought to take on board. So I'm going to conclude with, particularly because I've been doing these case studies for ALTS, and I've geared them to what I think small society publishers in particular need to get out of looking at what other people are doing with e-books and handheld readers, because obviously small society publishers don't have the resource. So if you aren't putting stuff on handhelds, where should you start? Well, first of all, I think you should look at what the big academic publishers are doing. And if you haven't been tracking what they're doing, I think you should go back and try and find out what they've done in the past. Because some of them have made some mistakes and some of them have made some quite expensive mistakes, actually. So it would be worth working out what those are so that you don't do the same thing again. As I've said before, I think you can learn from other sectors. As Rowena has illustrated, you can consult your authors and your end users. You can consider using a digital asset distribution company, which is a kind of one-stop shop which makes life very easy for you. But you do need to make sure you understand the costs. And the digital asset distribution companies charge for these things in very different ways, depending on who they are. So for some of them, for example, you pay up front and you pay for the number of titles that are hosted on the platform, and that's it, and they don't take any kind of revenue share. Others, you pay up front a bit, and then the rest is revenue share, and some will allow you total revenue share. That option, the last option, sounds very attractive, but do bear in mind that the more successful you are, the more money you're giving away. So the more confidence you have in your product, the less you should go for revenue share, basically. Don't spend more than you can afford, because things are still changing very rapidly and they will continue to change. And keep an open mind about it and don't despair about it. Don't want to take a spanner to your computer. I think that we're entering a period of great fun in publishing. And that if you play with things, play with the technology, play with the ideas, play with the formats, then you're likely to get some very interesting results. Thank you. And that's my big